Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome into another edition of the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. I'm James Bogert, your host for the evening. Joe cannot make it this evening, so you're going to deal with the James and Tom show, which I know is going to be fantastic for everybody. We're going to hit on a lot of great topics. We're going to do our final four previews for this season, which means the top four teams in the league last year. Denver, New York, Ohio, and Rochester. And to substitute Joe Keegan tonight, we do have a couple guests. We are going to talk to Brian Karolonis, Rip Hunt, Tom Schreiber, and we are going to get a little bit of feedback at the last portion of the show from Scott Ratliff, who is none too pleased with the way Tom and I treated his Boston Cannons in last week's preview episode, which should be really kind of fun because obviously neither one of us thinks they're going to do very well. We said a whole lot of disparaging things about the team. However, if Scott's listening right now, I want to point out that I'm the one who picked them above 4.5 wins. Tom picked them under. So if any venom is going to be spit, Tom is in front of me. With that being said, I want to welcome in Tom. And Tom, I kind of want to get right into it. Since we're going to be talking to Schreiber and Karolonis, I kind of want to go, we did last week from the bottom of the standings to the middle. This week I kind of want to go from the top of the standings back to the middle, if that makes any sense. So the first thing I kind of want to talk about is Denver Outlaws. This is a team that was basically Team Canada last year, getting ready for Worlds, getting ready for the future gold medal run of that team. And this year it's a little bit unclear as far as what this team's going to be. You're losing a guy like Curtis Dixon, who I think was huge for this team last year, and who kind of was able to kind of spot up in spots and really kind of fill in for a lot of things this team was able to do throughout the course of the year. If you look at their roster on their website, there's a lot of guys without numbers, and that does mean a lot of collegiate picks, but that also means a lot of uncertainty for this team. Tom, I just kind of want to get your impact real quick on exactly what the Canadian migration from this team could possibly do to the Denver Outlaws. You know, Canada won the FIL World title. They are the defending world champions. There's, there's a reason that style and the way they play did so well for them. The biggest loss is probably Lee Zink. He's irreplaceable. There's no nice way to put that. His retirement leaves a gaping hole in this defense. They're still a great defense. They still have a lot of great players. Schwartzman is still going to lead them. You know, Mike Simon's an all-star. Chris O'Doherty is probably the most underrated defender in the league. They still have plenty of pieces to go around. The trouble is they're losing a lot. Plus, they're relying on a lot of NLL guys that at this point we don't know when they're going to be available. There's no for sure date on Zach Greer, John Grant Jr., Cam Holding, Jeremy Noble. These guys are guys that are big parts of this roster, and they're maybe week four, maybe week three, maybe week five, maybe week eight. That's tough. That being said, just like every roster we've talked about, this team is deep. I mean, you've got the Bocklet brothers, actually have all three Bocklets, although I really just expect the two to probably make the team. You know, Chris had a little bit of an off year after leading the league in goals the previous season. Matt's just steady, consistent, tenacious, ridiculously good. They still have a ton of talent. If I was going to look at one guy on this roster and maybe say that he's maybe a question mark for me, it's going to be Anthony Kelly. I love the guy. A-Train is tremendous. He's a terrific player. He is an even better human being. But everybody thought he was given everything he had for one shot at a title. He got a title last season. Denver won it. They got it. Congratulations. He earned it, but more so than almost any other player I've ever seen in the league. Where's the motivation to come back? You've battled Achilles injuries. You've battled all kinds of injuries. You've been beat up, spit on, chewed, spit out. Now what? Now where's the motivation to want to beat yourself up and keep going at this level? But, you know, the guy's a competitor, so give him credit. Yeah, I think this team has, at full strength, we all know exactly how this team should probably work. We've seen the ball movement. We've seen the depth at attack and midfield that this team's been able to field throughout the course of the past couple of years. And this year's no different. If you look at their roster up and down, they still have that attack moving forward. The thing that I've been looking at, I think it's kind of interesting how the league scheduled this team, because you mentioned the fact that a lot of these guys are kind of question marks as far as when they're going to come to the team. And I don't think it's any secret that the Denver Outlaws are a huge prohibitive home favorite. They're the only team west of the Mississippi that the league has, and I think there's a reason behind that. And yet, when their team is most in flux right now, Tom, four of their first five games are away. They start out the season at Boston. They go at Ohio. They're home against the Hounds. Then they go to Rochester and then to Florida. But the majority of their season is back ended at home. Do you think that was almost, like, I don't want to say a loaded gun with the league, but how much do you think that's going to help this team moving forward? Because in the first five games, you can go 1-4, and you still have the only home win. And in this league, we've seen that somewhere near a 500 record gets you in the playoffs. How much of a factor do you think the schedule is going to be for this team?
It's tough. I mean, that's a tough travel schedule. You know, I wouldn't say because of this team, because I think all these guys travel fairly well. I don't know that there's really that much home field advantage. If anybody has one, it might be Denver because of, you know, Mile High Stadium and everything. But these guys travel every single week for something. So that's not a huge deal. The game on the schedule that I want to point to is the 4th of July game. It's always a huge deal. It's always a spectacle. It's always an event in Denver. The problem I have with it is they're bringing the Cannons back in. If you didn't watch the last time the Cannons came into Denver for a 4th of July game, it was an absolute debacle. So that one, I scratch my head as to why, if you're Denver, why would you want to play Boston again in your signature game when they've kind of spoiled the party the last couple times that they've played in that game against Denver. Another guy I failed to mention, and he cannot go without mention, is Jeremy Sieverts. Anytime you put him on a roster in this league, he has become one of the top midfielders in the world and an absolute threat. We're bringing back the grippy ball, and now he's got a shot to you know, launch the two, and he is now the reigning king of two-point ballers in the MLL with Kyle Dixon's retirement.
Yeah, I think the interesting for me, whenever you look at the schedule, you do mention the 4th of July game, but to me, this team is going to be at their full strength later on in the year. Look at their last three games. They're at New York, and then at home against Florida, and then at home against New York. So we always want to talk about the Lizards as being a team to really watch out for. Those are going to be marquee games. I wish, like you said, that one of those would have been scheduled on the 4th of July, just because that would have been a huge thing for this team. But also, you mentioned a guy like Sieverts, and you also talk about a guy like Drew Schneider, who is absolutely fantastic for this team and fits into the way they move the ball so well. And one player that's kind of interesting to me, being from kind of the Hound side of the league, and also I covered Calgary for Laxert for a while, is Jeff Schneider is on this team. And you mentioned the fact that Anthony Kelly's kind of, he might not be as invested with this team as he possibly could be. And we've seen Jeff Schneider come in and be almost like a mercenary for hire whenever a team kind of pushes for the playoffs. Do you see him making any role with this team after Canada's run, or do you think that just was a roster move to get him off other teams to possibly use?
Well, you look at Anthony Kelly's past history as the faceoff, and he really, I'm not going to say flames out, but he plays his best lacrosse before the All-Star break. He is 100% fresh, ready to go, and dominant until the All-Star break. He's still very good after that, but he's kind of broken down in the last couple of years with injuries after the All-Star break. Now you have a fresh Jeff Schneider coming in to take over that role at about that same time. And, yeah, I think he's going to want to play. This is Team Canada. He was committed to them. Now he's got all his teammates back playing for the same team as him. I mean, they're about five guys away from having the Team Canada roster. And, yeah, I think he's going to come in. I think he's going to make an impact. We're going to see him be that hired gun mercenary again and do his thing and impose his will for the last 4 to 6 to 8 weeks of the season.
And last question before we get done with Denver. Two guys we really didn't mention, John Grant Jr. and Eric Law, both of which kind of play polar opposite the way they play the game. John Grant Jr. being a back down offensive juggernaut, I think is the way to phrase it, and Law kind of being a little more of a sharpshooter type attackman. As far as this team is concerned, offensively, if you're looking at all the attackmen, who do you figure is going to be the most important cog to get going with this team? I think, you know, Grant Jr., you know what you're getting. So if you're going to look at the attack unit and say who's got to be the guy that steps up, I'm going to pick Bocklet because he had an off year last year. I think we know what we're going to get out of Law. I think he plays his best in that off-ball role where he's able to you know, backdoor people on the edge of the crease and slam dunk one home. And Grant Jr., the guy is almost 10 years older than I am. I'm not young, and he is almost 10 years older than me. And there's no doubt in my mind that he might be the best overall lacrosse player on the planet right now. Between field and box lacrosse, he just can do it. And he's still a monster, and you still have to game plan around him regardless of if it's indoor or outdoor. He's won the last, I think, 3 MLL titles in a row, and he's got a couple more in there. I mean, it's just, he's ridiculously good in every facet of the game. And I don't think he has many bad games. So to say he's not the focus is going to be wrong, but I don't think he's the guy that's going to make or break this team this season. I think it's somebody else having to step up. Yeah, Denver's going to be, I say it's not every team, they're going to be interesting, but Denver, to me especially, is going to be interesting to see exactly how this team is going to be put together midway through the season, because it seems like this is a team that functions with an offensive system that really akin to almost like a mid-2000s Phoenix Suns team. Like, they're very exciting on offense, which I think is going to be great. They're obviously going to miss a lot on the defensive end, but we're going to have to see kind of how they gel together. I think by mid-season, it's going to be interesting to see how they move forward. Now, we've gone through the champions, and now, unfortunately, Tom, your team came up a little short with a surprising year. Rochester Rattlers last year were incredible throughout the entire regular season. They finished on top of the standings. This year, they're going to have to deal with a couple big departures on a team that really was everyone said their veteran leadership was amazing, and I don't want to discredit that. But this team also was really benefited by a lot of youthful prospects who could make this team good for a long time. Tom, what's your early impact on the Rochester Rattlers, and where do you think they move on from a season where a 10-4 record was the best in the league?
Again, we're going to go back to the first issue being the NLL guys. Mark Cockerton is one of those rookies that you were talking about who absolutely stepped up and lit it up. Problem is, he also made the New England Black Wolves roster now, so his availability becomes a question mark as far as when he'll join the team. Mike Manley, Jordan McIntosh, Mark Matthews. You've got a number of guys that are now playing indoor lacrosse. Miles Thompson. You know, they're all playing the indoor game. Joel White, as a matter of fact. So you've got the core of your roster, some of your true playmakers, your best defender, your best long stick midfielder, one of your transition midfielders, and a couple of your attackmen all out. This is a problem. They picked up Jeremy Voltis to help alleviate the problem. You still have Jordan Wolf, who is going to be one of the best players in the world very soon. You still have John Galloway, but you go into this roster or into the season with a significant impact of, you know, amount of impact players not available. And, you know, you go back to the schedule talk like we did with Denver, and their schedule is almost flipped. They play New York 2 of the first 3 weeks of the season, a New York team that doesn't have any NLL players. So Rochester is staring down the barrel of the gun early, and they're doing it with one hand tied behind their back.
Yeah, Rochester is one of those teams that really is not going to benefit from early season schedule, playing the Wizards twice in the first three games. Like, it's going to be interesting to see exactly how this team gels. I think that, for one thing, you mentioned Jeremy Boltis, and I think enough has been said about him, but to see him back in the league, covering the Hounds as long as I have, it's awesome. And I think I wish him the best of luck, and hopefully he's able to make huge impact for this team. I think Dave Lawson is amazing coming from Duke, and I think that those two guys can possibly do a lot of stuff for this team. But this team really kind of opens and closes with the goalie, Galloway. And I think that as long as Galloway's back there, I think they always have a shot, because I think that he's one of the more underrated leaders in this league, and I think I've beaten it to a dead horse, because I really have a lot of respect for him. I mean, he's not only a super nice guy, but he's also very accommodating to any interview we ever ask from him. But he's also incredibly talented on the field, and so I think that for Rochester, it's going to be getting through those first couple weeks, because you mentioned it. This is a team that all of a sudden has a lot of commitments in the NLL. And once again, that just crops up with a lot of these teams. But the good thing for Rochester is they're not alone. And I think you could say this about any team in the league, is the fact you're not alone. Everyone has NLL people, except for, I think, Charlotte. But at some point in time, that's going to bite everybody. And now it comes down to man number 19, man number 20. And so the first couple weeks of the season, Tom, you know this team better than anybody. Who are you expecting to step up and be able to carry Rochester through the first couple weeks of the season until the NLL guys kind of get back?
You said it right. You said it perfectly. John Galloway, as long as they have him, they have a chance. And you know that they're playing good lacrosse if John Galloway is clapping his hands. Because every time he makes a play or his defense makes a play where he psychs out into the game, ready to go, he's clapping. And that's just the sign that you know they've got a shot in that game. They still have a tough defense. Mike Manley is obviously a big part of it. But John LoCascio is going to take Joel White's role while he's gone, step up a little bit, and they'll be fine at that position. On defense, you know, Will Kashansky and John Lade can hold down the back line until Manley returns. They've still got good short stick mids. They still have Lawson and Rannigan. So they'll be fine, I guess, is the word I'm going to use. They're not nearly as daunting as they will be once their roster is complete, but I still think the guys that they'll have early in the season will allow them to be competitive. And, you know, Dan Hardy is a guy that played terrific early in the season last year and then didn't really get a lot of minutes as the season wore on. So maybe that's your answer you're looking for, is look for him to play a big role early in the season and then, you know, basically give up his role once the stars return.
One player, Tom, I wanted to ask you about, and I know that the way this is going, I'm just highlighting Duke and Charlotte players, but Jordan Wolfe for this team is extremely interesting to me, because throughout the first couple weeks of the season last year, this team was built on defense. And I think this is still a defensive ball club. I think this is a defensive team. And I think that Galloway being the overwhelming force on this roster makes them defensive-minded. However, when you inserted guys like Cockerton, when you inserted guys like Wolf, this team all of a sudden became a juggernaut on both ends of the field. My question to you is, what are you expecting from year two, really full year one of Jordan Wolf? And what do you expect from him moving forward with a couple Thompsons in the fold?
He's an all-world player. I mean, he is the next, or one of, because there's still other guys out there, but he is one of the next great attackmen in the world. And he's going to be one of those guys that probably makes Team USA the next go-around with the guys who, you know, were previously on this team getting older. And he's just an absolute difference maker. You know, Kyle Harrison is really known for his first step and how he just blows by a guy at the first step. And I think Wolf is the exact same way. He's got a terrific first step. He's got a terrific hockey stop. And he can unleash that ball. You know, he'll take a shot where his body is behind goal line extended and score. I mean, he just has such an understanding of his positioning on the lacrosse field that it's amazing. There's a reason Tim Sudan basically said he wouldn't trade him for anything. You know, as a player, you want to hear that. You want your coach to have ultimate faith in you. And in this world, saying you won't trade a player for anything says a lot, because we did see Paul Rabil get traded. We kind of saw Rob Pinnell get traded. His draft pick that was going to be him, it was pretty much a foregone conclusion, got traded. So for a coach slash GM slash equipment guy slash trip planner, whatever Sudan is for this team, the owner of the Rattlers, if you want to call him that, to come out and say that he will not trade Jordan Wolfe, that's big. That's a big statement, and it shows what everyone thinks this guy is capable of.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of things awarded to Jordan Wolfe are very well deserved. But I also think a lot of the awards, whenever you look at the end of the season awards last year that were awarded this team, they were well deserved as well. Like, you look at a guy like Justin Turry, who just made a tremendous impact on this team, who were basically traded for peanuts. Like, he came to this team and made a huge impact from week one on. You look at a guy like John Galloway, who won the Goaltender of the Year award, Mike Manley, who won the Defensive Player of the Year award. Like, there's a reason why this team is so good. And there's a reason why, moving forward, this team should be in the conversation for title favorites this year, considering all the shakeups and other rosters. And speaking of shakeups, I actually do want to move on to a team that doesn't really need that much of an introduction, the New York Lizards, because the top line, we've talked about the Paul Rabil trade. We've talked about everything this team has done to make their top-end talent second to none, because that's what they are at this point in time. And, Tom, I want to dive a little bit deeper with this team, because we could talk about Paul Rabil again for, I mean, an hour, and we'd get nowhere. I mean, we know kind of what Pinnell and Crotty and this entire team's concerned, but whenever you really get down the nitty-gritty of this roster, it's the 19th. We talked about this earlier. It's the 19th guy. It's the 20th guy. It's the 21st guy. It's the guys who are going to suit up week in, week out. As this roster, is this the deepest roster that you've seen in NHL history? I mean, I hate throwing accolades like that, but I think this has got to be in the top two or three. Is this the deepest roster you've ever seen?
Yeah. I mean, there's no comparison. The 20th guy on this New York roster is probably going to be someone that can be picked up and start for another team. They're incredibly deep. They're incredibly talented. Again, on paper, which is the thing that writers and analysts and people say, this team is dynamic. We still have to see it play out. They still have some question marks. They still have some things, but they've got the coach. They've got the defense. They've got the goalie, the midfield, the attack, the faceoff. They just have every position locked down with superstars, not just studs, not just great players, but superstars. And I think this team is absolutely dynamic. But your point is absolutely correct. And we talked about it earlier. Somebody's going to be the 20th guy on this roster. Somebody's going to get told, you're not going to play this week because you're not the 19th man. You're the 20th man, and that's going to be tough. I mean, that's a tough job for a coach. That's going to, you know, you've got former MVP Matt Poske, who is just a throw-on to this roster. I mean, when you go up and down, it's incredible who they have, and picking 19 is going to be a hell of a job.
Yeah, it's going to be kind of crazy. And what I want to do with you, real quick, is just kind of go through the roster, because I don't want to go through the collegiate guys. Any guy on their roster right now doesn't have a number next to their name, kick them out. But I want to go through and just, like, talk about the 19 people who are going to make this team, because I think this is the most interesting training camp storyline to me, is when you have a team of superstars, who's going to be the last guy out? And so, like, I kind of want to just go through it. First off, I'm going to go through the goalies, because I think that a team like this, you're not going to do the thing last year and carry Devin on your practice squad. I don't think that's going to happen again. So Drew Adams is going to make it. You have Sean Brady sitting there as pretty much the perennial backup. You've got
goodness, I'm going to mispronounce this guy's name. Andrew Wiskavage, I guess. So you pretty much have your goalie situation taken care of. But I kind of want to go through the positions, just think, who are going to be the guys who are going to be kind of left out in the dirt whenever this team comes to roost? Because if you look at the attack right now, even without any collegiate players, you've got Ned Crotty, one. You've got Matt Gibson. You've got Cody Jamison, who, depending on his NLL restrictions, like, he's another player that you have. You've got Brandon Magan, Tommy Palasek, Rob Pinnell. And that is just your attack. Like, that's good enough for a lot of teams to form their entire attack in midfield. Do you think any of those guys are going to be kind of left out in the dirt? I'm not sure how Gibson will fit in. I think, assuming Crotty's going to play attack exclusively, I think you end up with, you know, Rob Pinnell, Tommy Palasek, and Ned Crotty is your three attackmen. That's your primary attack. Crotty can be your initiator. Pinnell is your quarterback. And Tommy Palasek is a sellout, go-to-the-crease guy that his own coach called the unsung hero of the team. He does it all. He's terrific going to the goal, and he just makes plays. Especially, you know, it seemed like last year, late in games, he was making a big impact. And so I think that's the situation. But, you know, factoring in the rookies, they've got a tremendous rookie class as well. And that kid out of Colgate, I know other teams have called New York and asked about him and asked about his availability. So they have a guy who, you know, Ryan Walsh, who is not going to be probably a starter for them, maybe doesn't have a tremendous role for them right away, that other teams want to be a key piece for their team.
Yeah, I mean, the attack in this team is super crowded. And yet, when you move to the midfield, here's where you really get kind of a logjam, because they have so many players who can make impact plays. I mean, you look at you have two Bratton brothers who are just kind of sitting off as almost castaways on this team. You've got an up-and-coming player like a JoJo Marasco, who proved last year that he can play on this level. And Tom, I know you're one of the huge JoJo fans, but I think he made fans out of anyone who really watched what he was able to do throughout the course of last year. You've obviously got guys like Poske. You've got guys like Paul Rabel. And it's just insane. And the thing that I always question is, some of these guys have to be left out, and that continues to mind-boggle you when you really dive down into what this roster looks like. Who are the players that you think are actually going to play for this team?
Well, that's the thing, is when I go and look at this roster, and you know, real quick, I'll shoot down the roster and list the guys that I think are locks. These guys are locks to make the field and play every game. And you'll notice there's a problem. There's 20 of them. Drew Adams, I think Sean Brady is your backup goalie. John Austin is going to be a defensive midfielder. Ned Crotty, Steve DiNapoli, Luke Dupree, Joe Fletcher, Matt Gibson, Greg Renlian, Kyle Hartzell, Steve Holmes, Michael Kimmel, JoJo Marasco, Tommy Palasek, Rob Pinnell, Steve Pizer, Paul Rabel, Michael Scuden, Brian Scalina, Mike Stone, and Kevin Understein. Actually, there's 21, and those are all guys that are used to playing. I didn't give you a backup faceoff guy. I didn't give you, you know, I gave you a backup goalie, and I gave you five attackmen. So something's got to give. Somebody's got to lose their job. And I left guys off. Lee Coppersmith, both of the Brattons, Cody Jamison. I left off a number, Brandon Mangan. I left off guys that could play, guys that can just flat find a spot with another team. Mike Unterstein is one of the better defensive midfielders in the league, and I really only gave him two. So it's going to be tough. This is a tough roster to make. This is a tough spot to be in. And you know what? The scariest part of all of it, I think Joe Spallini is excited about that.
I'm glad you left this open. because what I was getting at with my attack and midfield review is the fact that I think this defense is the most underrated, because of everything else that's happened, it's the most underrated defense we've seen in a while. Because you've got players like a Fletcher. You got players like a Dupree. You got players like a Hartzell. What do you make of their defense? Because I think that's going to be the key to this team. Because we all know, like, worst case scenario, like, this team's the Harlem Globetrotters on offense. Like, they're just going to tout everything about. But the past couple of years with this team, it's been the defense that's kind of broken down every now and then. It kind of lets the team down. But yet this year, it seems like they have the youth that's going to make this team really go forward. What do you make of the Dupree-Fletcher matchup with a Kyle Hartzell, and what do you think that's going to do for opposing teams? Because to me, I mean, you see these two guys play in college, and you didn't get a real good look at Dupree because of an injury, but at the same time, like, people said he looks great, and I just think that if he's at 100%, it's going to be tough to score on a team that's going to score a lot on you, and that presents a problem for the rest of the league.
You know, Fletcher's one of the best defenders in the league. Kyle Hartzell is one of the best transition long stick midfielders in the league. I think his defense has not slacked, but it isn't what it was. He became famous for his defense, and now he's famous for his transition and what he's able to do when he shoots the ball. So I think there's some of that. Dupree is an animal. I mean, he is an absolute animal. I think other teams have already said that they're for sure that he'll be an all-star in this league. I think that's a fair assessment. The guy is a monster. You know, he played after tearing his ACL because he just refused to come off the field. He just wore a knee brace. He wasn't as effective, no, but holy cow, he got back out there. And I agree. I think he fits perfectly in as an MLL defender. And then, you know, Coach Flina brings in his brother to be a field general and be a locker room leader. Now they have a solid voice in the locker room, talking with players. As much as Brian Flina has a bad rep as a penalty enforcer and a guy who takes tons of bad penalties, everybody says he is a locker room guy and the type of guy you want in the locker room. Now he's playing in his own backyard again, and he is playing for his brother. You pretty much have a hierarchy of leadership there that's unquestioned. This team they're stacked. I mean, sure, I could say they could use maybe one more quality deep hole, but, God, find me another defense that matches up with them guy for guy outside of maybe Denver, and you're going to have trouble.
Yeah, it seems to be an embarrassment of riches. Because this team, up and down, like when you look at what they did throughout the course of the offseason, they obviously made the big splash move. And that is something that I think we've covered ad nauseum. But I think that also, whenever you really get down to it, this is the team that can possibly make a big impact on the other end of the ball, which I think is being completely overlooked by the rest of the league. And speaking of the other side of the ball, I do want to welcome in Brian Karolunas, who is gracious enough to grace us with his presence. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great. This is James and Tom. I'm going to start you out. Real quick, you've been in a lot of other training camps, and now this is your first year with Ohio. How has this been different, coming into kind of what a different system for you? Has it been different, and kind of what have you kind of gained from the Ohio experience with a lot more of the youth movement on the offensive end?
Right. Yeah, like you said, it's a different experience. Before I get started, I want to apologize ahead of time. I've got a little bit of a head cold here, so I apologize for the nasally voice. But like you said, I'm used to the Lizards training camp, and coming in this week, I only have 1 weekend to go on. But it was certainly a different experience. And every team does things a little bit differently. They have their own systems, their own idea of how to run a practice in a training camp. That said, it was an absolutely amazing experience. Like you said, we have a young team, we have a dynamic team, and we have a team that's eager to win, which is great. So this was actually, out of my 5 years in the league, I think there was more energy this weekend than I've been a part of, which was, you know, really reassuring going into a season when we have high expectations for the squad.
You mentioned your experience, and you mentioned the fact that Ohio is the kind of one of the youth-oriented teams as far as attack is concerned. And this is the last question I have for me. I'm going to throw you back over to Tom after this. But what have you been able to give the players that you were able to face the past couple of years and give them a little bit of insight and make the attack as preeminent as we all think it can be while still like maintaining the defensive hold that the team's been able to do?
Right. So I think in general, it's just a leadership thing. You know, the more you play in this league, the more you realize how it works, and especially in the MLL, more so than in college. You know, great offense leads to great defense. This league is geared towards scoring, so if your attack is doing well and your offense has possession of the ball, then you're going to have a good defense. So that's the part that I think we're hoping out. That I'm hoping to help with is kind of explain that and help the defense and the offense know when to take chances, when to settle it down. And I think we're going to have a really dynamic group.
Hey, BK, it's Tom. How's it going?
Tom, how you doing, man? Good to hear from you.
First off, I'm gonna go back to the trade. I mean, how was that for you getting traded?
Certainly a whirlwind. Not something that I was expecting. Like I said, I've spent the last 4 years in the Lizards, and you kind of get lured into this sense of comfortability where you think that's where you're going to be forever. So when I got the news and I got the call that I was moving to Ohio, I was definitely a little bit shocked. Well, first Boston and then later that day Ohio. So I actually traded twice in one day. But I was shocked, and it was a little bit of a change of pace for me. You know, obviously having lived in New York most of my life, but after I spoke with Coach Davis and with the Ohio organization, I was thrilled. And Ohio's a team, like we just said, that we're young and we're hungry. So something I was really excited about, and I was fortunate enough to know a bunch of the guys before I even went to camp this weekend. And this weekend kind of reaffirmed what I was thinking, that this is a group that has as good a shot as anyone in the championship. And really excited to take on a little bit of a different role at Ohio, get thrust into a leadership position on the defense. And it's something that's really exciting. I think it's going to lead to a good year.
Speaking of a leadership thing, you go into Ohio, your first weekend of camp, your first weekend together. Damon Wilbur's not available. So Brian Farrell's the only returning starting defender that they had available for this camp. How was it trying to get the defense together and get them to play as a unit when you guys aren't quite a unit yet?
Like you said, it'll be a work in progress, especially the first weekend of camp. You have a lot of new faces there, so there's still guys that are fighting for the team. So over the next couple of weekends here is when you're really going to start to see, you know, what our core unit is going to be and the faces that will be out there week in and week out. So we had a bunch of guys, young guys at camp, and I think that was kind of the theme for the weekend is all getting on the same page. So, you know, everyone's talented, but especially in this league, I mean, defense, being successful on defense has way more to do with being a cohesive unit. So, like you said, Farrell was there and Waldeck had played half the season with him last year. So we had a couple of veterans, but a bunch of new faces, and it was a bunch of instruction and, learning just the intricacies and differences between the MLL game and the college game.
And this team is, I mean, they were built on offense last year. They were the highest scoring unit in the league. Do you think that that'll be like a huge benefit to the defense to come together to face this caliber of an offense in practice?
100%. You know, like I just said to James as well, in this league, even more so than in college, a successful defense, you need to have a successful offense. It's so many talented players, and it's such a high-scoring league that the best D generally has the best, though, in an offense that can control the ball. So one thing that I'm going to try to stress for the defense is, you know, everyone knows about our offense. Ohio's offense isn't taking anyone by surprise anymore, and they're going to be putting up goals this year. I mean, it was amazing to look at them this weekend. They already seemed in midseason form. So one thing that's going to fall on our shoulders is being able to be an effective enough defense to help them out and you know, do enough to help a team win games, because our offense is going to be putting up a lot of goals. And that's something I'm excited about. I think it's a challenge that everyone on the defense is really looking forward to.
Obviously, with you changing teams, is there anybody on this team that maybe you haven't played with before that you were looking forward to now being teammates with?
Certainly, a few guys. Offensively, you know, a couple guys that stick out. I'm a huge fan of Kyle Harrison's game. Obviously, he's a legend in the sport, and you know, his his reputation as a leader kind of pervades the entire sport. So I'm really excited to be able to work with him. And then, like you said, we have a bunch of young faces, Marcus Holman, Tom Schreiber, Steele Stamm, Peterbaum. Those are all high-energy guys that I'm really excited to get a chance to play with. On the defensive end, you know, I've been able to play with Farrell and Waldeck, so that'll be great to be reunited with those guys. And you mentioned Dana Wilbur. I'm excited to play with him. I've always been a huge fan of his game. So there's a bunch of guys that I'm really looking forward to mixing it up with, being on their side of the ball for the first time.
And last one for me, and we'll let you go. Week one, you go back home. You go back to New York, face your old team. I mean, obviously it's the first game on the schedule, but is there added motivation there now?
I'd be lying if I said there wasn't. You know, those guys are, like I said, I was in town for 4 years. I mean, I love those guys. I consider everyone on the New York roster to be like a brother. But as soon as I got traded, the number one thing I did was look and see how our opening game was. And I had a big smile across my face when I saw it was the Wizards. You can bet that I'm going to go into town and, you know, see those guys. And there will be a little extra something there, a little extra motivation to start off the season 1-0. I'd love to get that bragging right to start off the year.
I mean, it's just awesome that you actually said that, because everyone knows that's the way it should be, which is awesome. But Brian, thanks for coming on. Wish you continued success. Good luck this year. Everything goes with it. And thanks for coming on with us. I know I speak to Tom when you're one of the guys we're rooting for. And like I said, continued success throughout the course of the year.
Tom and James, thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Take care.
That was Brian Karalunis coming on with us and taking a little bit of time out. I just always laugh whenever people actually have the gall to admit the fact they circle people on their schedule, because everyone knows they do it. Everyone knows that Karalunis is looking forward to that week one matchup. He's going home. He's going to a team that he identifies himself with. And Tom, it's going to be amazing to see Ohio this year. It's a rivalry with Charlotte, and it's a fun thing to deal with whenever you look at the way these two teams have always kind of clashed with each other. But if you're looking for a more dynamic and exciting team, and you look past Ohio, I don't really know where else you're looking, because I think this team is just going to be amazing on the offensive end. So let's talk a little Ohio before we get Tom Schreiber on for a little while. And I mean, this team last year was dynamic on the offensive end. You look at a guy like Kyle Harrison coming in, Peter Baugh made the impact we all thought he would, and you had little bits of other players factoring in. But in general, this team was extremely efficient on the offensive end, and yet on the defensive end, it seems like they needed a little something, and Karalunis could possibly be that guy. So what do you really make of the defensive unit of Ohio moving forward into the season?
Ohio's defense is going to be interesting, is the best way I can describe it. There are a whole lot of long stick midfielders that are going to have to play close defense. You know, they're built up of that group. That's what they are. Brian Farrell, Brian Karalunis, Stephen Waldeck, those are all true long stick midfielders that are probably going to have to play some close defense. Stephen Waldeck played great lacrosse once he moved over to Ohio last year. I thought he was a difference maker for that defense. Dana Wilbur was a supplemental draft pick who ended up probably being the best defender on Ohio's roster last year. Brian Karalunis, I can't say enough about the guy. I love the guy. I got to sit at All-Star Game down in Charlotte and have a couple of beers with him at the players' party after the game. And he is just awesome. I mean, as a person, as a player, the guy went to New York when New York was bad defensively. I mean, they didn't have the names and the players that they have now. He was forced to play a lot of, you know, close defense, behind the goal, guarding the ex-attackman, guarding the number one guy, and he did it, and he did it at an all-star level, despite that not being his natural position. He still did it. He still got it done. He's still one of the best long stick midfielders in the game. I do agree with Coach Felina's assessment that he did have a little bit. Last year wasn't his best season. He was still as good or better than many of the long sticks in the league. It wasn't his best season. But the guy is incredible. He's an incredible person. I hope he's the difference maker for Ohio,
because looking at this roster, the nicest way I can put it is their offense is significantly better than their defense, but their offense is significantly better than every offense in the league. They're just disgusting good, and I can't wait to see that first game against New York when, you know, Ohio trouts out probably everybody on their roster except for Logan Shush, because we don't know his availability. He'll still be with the Swarm at that time. But that is the week one matchup to watch at this point.
Well, one thing about Ohio that I kind of want to get into with you is something that we talked about over the course of the past year. Because if you look at what Ohio did in 2013 throughout the course of their season, their faceoff percentage was below 40%. And this year it was a hair below 50%. So the players that they have on the roster and the players that they have coming in, because they did draft a little bit of help on the face-off X, do you think that's a point of emphasis on this team? Because it seems like their offensive unit is taken care of. Their defense is a unit that I personally think is undervalued with them because of how much offensive firepower they have. But how much of a value do you think they've put on the X right now and the players that could possibly be manning that line?
Coming out of machine training camp last year, I was told by numerous players, numerous people, that Bobby Dottillo was the best faceoff guy in camp. They cut him. They kept him on the roster for a couple of weeks, and then they cut him. They went with Eric O'Brien. It didn't work. O'Brien just doesn't get it done all the time, and he's been a career 40% guy. That's not MLL standard. That's not where it's at right now. I think there's other avenues they can explore, but right now I think Bobby Dottillo is their guy. He's a little guy. He's probably the smallest faceoff guy in the league at 5'7", 175 pounds, but he got it done last year. And in their stretch run, he was an impact player for them and their best faceoff guy. And I think that is his job to lose at this point.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how they move going forward, because they went from the league worst to league average, which I think is a big step for a lot of these teams when you only have 18 in the league. And so it should be really interesting to see exactly how this team moves forward. And so we've previewed all of our teams at this point in time, Tom. And what I kind of want to get into with you, and this is kind of spur of the moment, we're waiting on Tom Schreiber to call. We're probably going to get him in 10 minutes, is to project a little bit of the biggest position values and the position battles that you see moving forward as far as each team is concerned. When you look at the Ohio Machine, what exactly do you see as far as being a need that could possibly be addressed throughout free agency, throughout training camp battles, and who do you think could possibly make an impact on this team?
You know, the rookies they have coming in are very interesting. Jimmy Bitter, where does he fit? Was he drafted to take Logan Shush's spot? Is that because they're unsure what his availability is going to be? And how does he fit into their blow past the other guy and you know, speed move offense? A guy Joe would talk about up and down if he was on is Ryan Izzo, another terrific player. And I think he's stepped it up as a defensive midfielder. I think he could come in and possibly be the best defensive midfielder on Ohio's roster day one. Not taking anything away from the season Dominique Alexander had last year. But the battle's going to be for just being as good as you were last year. That's the trouble Ohio is going to have. Last year, this offense was amazing. They were must-watch lacrosse every single game they stepped on the field. They were terrific. They brought in Stephen Boyle to add to that. You know, where does he fit? How does his roster work out? He was kind of an early-season player for the Rattlers last year and then completely lost his minutes, then got one game back and had his best game in a long time. So how they balance out the minutes for the players that they have is going to be interesting. Couple that with the fact that, just like every other year, they've got like 17 goalies in camp. I mean, it's Kyle Feeney, Will Haas, Brian Phipps, Scotty Rogers. I mean, they have so many. I think Stefan Schroeder's there as well. They just have so many guys on this roster that it's scary, but their top six offensively is where it's at. And, you know, we'll talk to Schreiber about it, but how good would they have been in the playoffs? Do they win that game against Rochester if Schreiber plays? I just think it's going to be interesting to see what they're able to do. And, you know, I've said it a couple times already, but is Logan Schoesch going to play? Is he going to be a part of this roster? Because he brings such a dynamic they don't have. Without him, they don't have that guy, that catch-and-shoot finisher that can shoot from 1 yard or 12 yards or 14 yards and blow it past the guy and put it anywhere he wants to on cage. They don't have that guy. They got a lot of step-down shooters and a lot of dodging down-the-alley shooters, but they don't have that sniper.
Yeah, this team, Ohio is really interesting as far as, like, not having Schuss available the first couple weeks to see exactly where the offense is going to go. Because we all know what they can do as far as having a couple players be hopefully healthy, because we've seen guys like Eric Crum even in a pinch make a huge impact for the team, because we saw last week in week one, Tim destroyed me over whether or not Eric Crum was going to make an impact, and all of a sudden you see exactly what he can possibly do, and that just speaks to exactly what this league is moving towards moving forward. And with a couple minutes to kind of spare with open dialogue, what I want to ask you, Tom, is I want to try to figure out the team that could possibly have an underrated player move forward from the NLL. Because we all know that the NLL is going to take away a lot of talent from these teams throughout the course of the first couple weeks. Which player do you think is going to make the most of a situation, really? A player who might take the NLL's break and the NLL's taking of players away from rosters and make a name for themselves on one of the teams we talked about?
With that question, you really have to look at the two teams that are probably most impacted by the NLL, and that's Rochester and Denver. Those are the teams that are going to have the most guys that need to step up and make plays. Because they're missing the players, they've got guys that could be out 4 to 8 weeks potentially. And I think you look at Rochester because they need somebody to play a lot of different roles. And the player that I'm looking for to have a big impact, and he was very, very good last year, but, you know, I already talked about him, is John Nicasio. He's got to fill not only his role, but Joel White's role. And they played on the wings at times last year together and would go after the ball. So do they move Will Kashansky up and have Lacasio and Kashansky on the sides coming for the ball? How do they fill that Joel White role on this team in the intern with him being one of the best guys that there is, especially off the ground? I mean, I don't think there's any long stick midfielder or player in the league that I would want to throw a ball out on the field and say, go get me the ball and not take Joel White.
Yeah, I think you're. I mean, obviously you're the foremost expert on things like that. Like, my goodness, like I'm in awe of the analysis. But the other question I wanted to ask you is a huge question as far as I'm concerned with the Rabel Pennell situation. Is just your preseason pick for MVP. Because I think that's an interesting conversation now, because you have the LeBron James-Dwayne Wade dichotomy where you give it to the best overall player, because if so, like, I feel like that's not an obvious question anymore. And I feel like the two best players in the league, talent-wise, are on the same roster. So do you think there's going to be a dark horse MVP candidate, or do you think it's going to go to a New York Wizards player by the time the season's over with?
Marcus Holman. How about that? There's my dark horse MVP candidate, guy I think who's going to have an amazing season, who's probably I'm going to slide him in next to Jordan Wolfe and Rob Pinnell as that third all-world attackman right now. Put him on that roster. Debate that all I want. Even with myself, I'll debate that too. But Marcus Holman had a terrific season last year. I think he's prone to break out. If Ohio's going to have a shot at the championship, he has to be that much better this season. The USA World Team experience made a huge difference for him. His confidence is high. He got to play a little indoor this year. Well, he didn't play, but he made the Swarm practice squad. Got to play a little bit of that. He has all the tools to make a tremendous impact. That's my MVP. I think Rabel and Pinnell being on the same team, they'll both have amazing years, but it's the conversation of they'll hurt each other for votes because you can only vote for one of the two guys on the same team. Holman's going to win the MVP this year.
Gotta say, I love that pick, to be honest with you. I'm surprised you didn't say Matt Nanowski, but you know what? We can move on from that whole point. The next thing I want to ask you about is
Matt Nanowski is going to win the LVP, the least not least valuable player. That's the wrong way to put it, but the player who's going to hurt his team the most throughout the season by taking bad shots and forcing bad turnovers. No, Nanowski, I think his role on that team is going to be interesting this year. I think he's going to be an impact player and probably have the best season we've seen him have since he left New York. I think he fits in well with the little older crowd that they have in Chesapeake. I think that'll motivate him some. I think kind of getting cast away from Charlotte is going to be a big deal. The key is it's going to be in how many shots he takes. If he's shooting like he's working for the U.S. government and the shells are free, he's going to go off. But if he reins in his shot, makes the smart play, finds the right pass, does everything he's supposed to do as a lacrosse player, not as a hired gun, then he'll be just fine.
Well, with that being said, and by the way, very quotable on that one, I want to ask you about impact rookies because Joe's not on the show, so we can't do analysis on the seventh round picks who do whatever. And so I actually kind of want to table that real quick because we do have Tom Schreiber on the line. I said that 2 seconds before he signed up. And so we're going to welcome Tom Schreiber on the line. Tom, thanks for joining us. It's James and Tom, and I'm going to ask you a couple questions real quick. And first off, I want to know how your injury is going because you missed a couple games last year. And want to know kind of how training camp's going and whether or not you're at 100%. Ready to go.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for having me, guys. I hope everything's going well. But I'm all healed up with my wrist injury. You know, I banged it up kind of on a weird play. I'm still not even sure how it happened to this day. It was kind of a freak injury where my hand just started hurting and, you know, we had a lightning delay during the game, so I think the adrenaline wore off, and I wasn't really able to even grip my stick once we came back out from the locker room. But since then, it's been smooth sailing, and I've been all good. No issues, and I'd say I've been 100% for a couple months now, and it's, you know, great to get back on the field with the boys out in Ohio.
Well, we actually just talked to Brian Karolunas a couple minutes ago, and He was complimenting you guys and saying, you know, how dynamic this offense could be. You had a great couple games of your rookie season before kind of having your injury. What do you guys expect from you guys' offense throughout the course of this season, assuming everyone's healthy, because you guys seem to be the most dynamic offense in the league?
Well, I think we just want to continue to improve. I think if you look at our games last year, we really didn't hit our stride until about the middle of the year. I think it took us a little while in the beginning of the season, you know, with Kyle and Peter coming in. from the LXM in the beginning of the year, and I missed the first couple games. Logan Shust missed the first couple games, so I think it took us a little while to really get acclimated with each other. So hopefully we can, you know, skip that part of it and just, you know, hit the ground running from the beginning, April 12th against the Lizards. So I think our expectations are high, but I think we just have to treat each game as a new week and you know, try to improve and then try to, you know, exploit certain matchups and make sure that we're working together and continuing to improve the whole year.
How big is it for you having an entire training camp and having an entire training camp with guys like a Kyle Harrison, moving forward and trying to make sure that you guys are all on the same page? And how exactly do you think it's going to manifest itself moving forward in the first couple weeks of the season, where a lot of other teams might have a lot more indoor commitments? And how do you guys think it's going to manifest itself moving forward?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I think it's a huge advantage. It's obviously something that I haven't been a part of before, you know, joining the team late last year because of the college season. And I think yeah, everyone would agree that it's just great to get back there, you know, with the whole team together and getting acclimated to each other in March, you know, almost a month before our first game. And you mentioned a guy like Kyle Harrison, just keeping everybody on the same page, keeping everybody composed and focused. So like you said, I think it's a huge advantage. I think we improved, you know, hour to hour out in Ohio this past weekend, and I'm sure that the offense will get even more comfortable and used to each other this upcoming week as well.
And last one from me, and I'll throw it over to Tom. Carolunas mentioned the fact that you guys actually are having a lot of fun in training camp, and that's one of the things that just gets lost on a lot of people. How fun is it being in your first training camp with a lot of these guys and kind of going through all the drills with your teammates and not being in college and knowing that you're going to have to go over there midway through the season and get acclimated with everyone? How great is it just being around everybody throughout the course of this offseason?
It really is great because this is, you know, the first time in my life where I'm not a part of a team almost every day throughout the year. You know, I go back to when I was a little kid, I was playing a million sports, meeting up with my teammates almost every day. In high school, I played football in the fall, lacrosse in the spring, lifting with all my buddies in the winter. To get on to college, we have something almost every day with a team. And now this is my first year without it. And to be, you know, to be frank, I missed it. And like you said, it was great just to be out there with everybody and having fun. Because I think it's something everyone misses. You know, any competitive person, anyone who's been an athlete their entire life, you know, they're used to being around a team and having that camaraderie all year round. So I think it was great for everyone to get out there. Everyone was excited. I know our team text chain was pretty active, you know, leading up to training camp, and I think we had a great time all around. I think everybody's looking forward to this weekend.
Hey, Tom, this is Tom. Week one, New York. We talked to Carolunas a little bit about it. Obviously, he has added motivation. They've done some huge things in the off season. Is that the team you guys would pick to play week one if you had a choice to kind of not just break the ice but to shatter the glass right away?
I would say so. I mean, my thought process is I hope that, you know, we're getting them before they're able to figure everything out with, you know, their team dynamics. I think that they have, you know, so many options on offense. It hopefully it'll take them a few weeks to figure it all out, and we'll catch them at a good time. But at the same time, you know, we're confident in our team. I think we made some improvements in the off season, especially on the defensive end of the field. And you know, it's such a small league, and the talent is so concentrated onto eight teams where, you know, any team could beat anyone else any week throughout the year. But I think it is a good start for us. You know, I think this is the first year the machine is really coming into a season a little more confident than usual. We had our first winning season, our first playoff appearance last year, and I think, you know, that could just be the tip of the iceberg for us. And I think we're all ready to go. And you know, the Lizards are definitely, I would say, you know, have made the biggest splash in the off season, you know, acquiring a guy like Rabel and we're excited. I think it'll be a great, you know, opening weekend matchup.
And speaking of the playoff game, how was it on you having to watch the game, not being able to play because of the injury?
Well, it was terrible. And you know, it was even worse that I couldn't be there physically. I was, you know, watching on my computer with my dad in my house, and it was a bummer. You know, I talked to Kyle and Peter Baum about it this past weekend, and you know, it wasn't easy, you know, because I had such a good time all year, and we were really hitting, you know, our stride at that point of the year, and really getting a lot of momentum, and I was seeing, you know, our potential, and I was pretty confident we could make a championship run, and once we made it into the playoffs, it was even, you know, harder for me not to be able to contribute out there on the field. But like I said before, I'm all healthy now, and then hopefully, you know, I stay healthy all year and we could get there again.
So you've had 8 months basically off where you haven't played this level of lacrosse. I'm assuming you've still mm-hmm. played some, but you haven't played this level of lacrosse. You come back and you take your frustrations out opening weekend by absolutely pelting your goalie?
Well, that it's Scotty's own fault for stepping into that shot. I mean, he doesn't move. That's a goal for me. And he's a big body. He's a big target. So I'm definitely not aiming for the big rig out there. I'm trying to put it past him. He made a nice save. And, you know, he's looking good. And hopefully I don't hit him again next week. Hopefully I get him past him.
That is the perfect answer to that. I'm a former goalie, and I'm sure that Scotty is hating you despite being your teammate right now. But last question I have for you, and then we'll let you move on. Who's a player? I mean, you guys brought in a lot of new faces into camp. There's a lot of different faces. MLL teams kind of change as the year goes on. Who's a guy that didn't play for the Machine last year that maybe we didn't talk enough about that impressed you in camp?
You know, you guys have talked about him, but I do want to mention Karolinas just for a second here. You know, I think he's going to make a huge impact on our team. I think he's probably the most underrated guy in the league, and I hate playing against him. So I'm happy that he's on our team for that reason, and I think that he'll make a huge difference for us in the middle of the field. But on the offensive side of the ball, I think Zach Palmer will make a big impact for us on the left side. On attack, you know, he's just a very crafty player. He sees the field well, and I think he definitely stood out for us. Eric Crum on attack as well, who played a couple games for us early on. He's an extremely physical dodger, can put the ball in the back of the net, and probably rides harder than anyone I've ever seen, other than my college teammate Mikey McDonald. I think those two on our side of the ball, and then I think BK down low on defense will make a huge impact.
I mean, you got to love it whenever the person you hate the most playing against comes on your team. That's one of the best feelings in the world, having him be on your side. And at least you just get to play him in practice and he picks you up instead of knocks you down again. So Tom, thanks for coming on. Tom Schreiber, you guys can follow him at Tom Schreiber 26, and continued success, and we hope you guys do really well, unless you guys play the Hounds, or I guess the Rattlers in Tom's case, but either way, continued success, and we're glad that you guys are fully healthy, and hopefully you guys do really well moving forward. Thanks for coming on.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And that was Tom Schreiber, and that Ohio team, Tom, is going to be really kind of tough because I think that this entire roster is geared towards a lot of offensive firepower. We've already dealt with them a lot. And to hear a player say exactly what we all were thinking, like, you got to hate playing against BK at some point in time and to only play against them in the dredge of training camp must be a little bit of relief. But moving on, until we deal with Scott Ratliff, who I have to
say is coming on, who is going to try to destroy us. I feel like we need to go over the Boston Cannons just for another 10 seconds, because for those who don't know, Tom and I are not big fans of the Boston Cannon season moving forward. And Scott Ratliff is an avid listener of the show, and he is going to call in about 5 minutes, and Tom and I got to defend ourselves by saying the team is deemed the worst team in the league. And so I feel like we need to revisit that team, because I did pick them in our prop bets a couple weeks ago to go above 4.5 wins. You picked them below. And so just to kind of give everyone kind of a good impact on why we said everything,
you're giving me the dumb and dumber part at the end of the movie where he says, okay, kill him. You know, you're really pointing the finger, because last week you were very adamant about how Boston was going to be the worst team in the league. And now you're taking a step back and trying to take the high road, trying to be the good guy in a bad situation.
Well,
I'm not afraid of it. I am not afraid of the fact that I picked Boston to win 4 games or less. I'm not going to debate that. I'm not even going to walk away from that fact. That was my pick. I stand by it 100%.
Well, I mean, I think you're painting me into a corner here, because I did say the team is the worst roster in the league, which I will stand behind right now. However, if you look at where the worst rosters in this league have been, I mean, the four to five win ratio is probably in play. My thing is, I just don't think Boston has the roster the first couple weeks to maintain with what their schedule dictates. And because if you look later on in the season, we've looked at it tonight. They played Denver on July 4th, which is one of the dumber scheduling things the MLL ever could do, is take just a team with name recognition only and put them against a team that actually has extreme value for them. And so I really think that right now, it's going to be kind of one of those interesting things to look at how these rosters play themselves out, because I really don't know what Boston's going to be able to give you. And speaking of which, Mr. Scott Ratliff is going to call in. Scott, I want to welcome you into the show with James and Tom. And we're prepared to defend our assessment as far as the Cannons are concerned. Tom and I said throughout the course of last week's show that the Cannons possibly have the weakest roster in the league. Just to put this on a backdrop, Tom picked them under 4.5 wins. I picked them over, slightly over, whenever we did our preseason show. And we really want to welcome you in and thank you for coming on. But first off, what I want to ask you is, how mad are you at Tom?
You know what? I think I'm actually happy with you guys. I've got a little experience in this. In 2012, my college team was ranked 21st to start the season, and I think a lot of people were saying that we were supposed to be pretty bad. And you know, I've got a nice big ring on my finger now. So you know, I appreciate the motivation at all times. And as I told him, I appreciate what you guys do and the passion you have for it. So I wouldn't say that I'm mad.
Oh, well, for one thing, I mean, we wish you, of course, if the team did well, like, I'm the first person to be proven wrong. I mean, I've done this 1,000 times. But needless to say, I mean, the team has obviously been chosen a little bit less than what, obviously, you guys want. How has your impact been on this team been, and how do you think you guys match up this year? Because you guys obviously have a lot of collegiate players who are going to commit midway through the season and make – what you guys think should be a huge impact. So what do you guys think is going to be your early season impact? So I think that's the big question mark that I have. How do you think the existing roster is going to make throughout the course of the first couple weeks of the season?
I think the big thing for us is development of guys that are on our roster. I think sometimes, you know, when you're going into a season and we lost some big names and honestly some of the best players to ever play, with Ryan Boyle and with Steven Berger, Kyle Sweeney, you know, obviously with Paul getting traded. So it's easy to look at that and to notice that. But, you know, when you're inside a locker room and you know the guys in there and you know how hard a Will Manny worked and how hard a Brent Adams worked, I mean, a guy that
nobody ever talks about. He was scoring two or three goals every single game by the end of the season. And, you know, Rob Emery came onto the scene as a young guy, and Scott McWilliams on the defensive end. So, you know, Scott McWilliams isn't Kyle Sweeney in terms of his body of work in the career, and a Rob Emery isn't Paul Rabil. And, you know, Will Manny may not be Ryan Boyle yet, but we think that the guys that we have in our locker room have been working extremely hard in the off season. And, you know, I think that's why we're going to surprise some people, because, you know, I just think that's something you can't take account for, is how much better guys can get if they go and they're motivated and they come back ready to work.
Heading into a training camp situation with veteran leadership like yourself and Will and a couple other players, what do you tell people who are coming in there for the first time? And what do you tell guys who are coming in who might be looking for a chance to make a roster that they think is kind of open with the trade of Paul and kind of the situation you guys are in right now as far as the public perception is concerned? How much is leadership like yours and like Will Manny's leadership paramount to how this team's going to be moving forward?
It's definitely huge. I mean, I think on any team, leadership's extremely important. I think we've got some of the best, and you know, guys that we haven't mentioned, with Brody Merrill, obviously, you know, with how the Rocks season go, we could be missing him for a little while, but he'll come in and have an immediate impact, not just on the field, but in the locker room. And also Kevin Buchanan, a guy that, you know, he may be the best player in the league last year, and again, kind of goes untalked about a lot for some reason. So I think our leadership's strong. I think the message to young guys when they come in is, you know, it's easy to come in as a young player in the MLL and, you know, you're not practicing 5 days a week and you're fresh out of your college season that you put so much heart and emotion into. And it's got to be that, you know, listen, this is a job. And if you don't work at it and if you don't treat this with the same level of intensity and the same level of passion that you treat your college team, you're not going to last. And, you know, I think that's something that probably took myself a year or two to learn. And I think it probably takes a lot of young guys a year or two to learn that you feel like, you know, I finished college, I can just come in here, I'm playing lacrosse, it's fun. But, you know, that's not the case. And the teams that have success, you know, they treat it as a profession, and they treat it with the same level of intensity and the same level of passion that they treated their college careers. And that's how they become successful for a successful team. So, you know, the message for us, and again, I think it starts at the top down with Brody and with Kevin Buchanan and Jordan Burke and the guys that have won championships in the league, is just to carry yourself as a professional and, you know, not take this for granted, because there's a lot of lacrosse players out there that would kill to be in your shoes, and, you know, and they're not. So it's important to just understand that and to keep that in the back of your mind and to work towards what you want.
And this is the last question from me, and I'm going to let you – go ahead and rail Tom on whatever he said about you guys. But the one thing that I really want to kind of know about you guys are moving from Harvard Stadium to kind of a bigger place about an hour away in Gillette Stadium. And I just want to know what you think the impact of that's going to be on the team and on the fan impact, because every time that I've ever heard about anything about Harvard Stadium, we – deal real close with Tim Thomas, and he covered you guys for a long time, and he said, you know, he always raved about the home field advantage. Do you think that's going to be any sort of impact on the fan, and do you think that that's going to be an impact on you guys, having to travel that far away from Boston as far as playing a game on a week-to-week basis?
No, I don't think it'll have an impact on us. Again, it goes back to the professionalism, and we're going to be ready to play when we step on the field, regardless of where we are. Now, Harvard was an awesome stadium. It was a great home field advantage. The crowd support there, you know, in my experience, has been better than anywhere else in the league. But I expect to have more of the same at Gillette. You know, I think that a lot of our fan base was maybe making that hour drive from kind of those suburbs and Walpole and out there by Gillette. So, you know, it could even be more convenient for them. And, you know, our GM does an amazing job, and he's taking this organization to another level. And anytime you can step in a building that's got four Super Bowl championships, you know, I think that's a big upgrade. And I think the guys are excited about it. I think the training facilities, the locker room facilities will probably be a big upgrade there. And I expect the crowd support to continue right on. So I think the overall vibe on the team, you know, we'll miss Harvard Stadium. I'm sure, especially for the veterans, there's a lot of good memories there. But I think we're all pretty excited. I mean, we're very on board with this move. And you know, again, just being surrounded in a place that really has bred winning, you know, hopefully some of that can rub off on us.
Scott, it's Tom. I'm gonna quick follow up on that and say, how excited are you to actually have a locker room rather than a trailer off the side of the building?
I'm not gonna lie, that is the biggest thing. As great as Harvard was, it was not the most welcoming locker room situation for us. So to go in there and have a real locker room, and again, I go back to the training facilities. I mean, when you get access to those kind of training facilities, when Adam Thomas was maybe the best trainer in the league, and it's great. I mean, it helps you to feel like a professional, and when we talk, about the importance of acting like a professional, this is only going to enhance that. So I think it's all going to be positive with our move out to Gillette.
The roster's changed tremendously this offseason. You're going to have a number of new teammates this weekend in camp, a number of guys trying to make the roster. Your roster probably changed more than any as far as, like you said, guys who have been there for a really long time, guys who were proven members of this team. The teams that made the playoffs last year, Denver, Ohio, Rochester, I talked to a number of guys in the league. Those teams are very close-knit. They constantly talk. They have a text chain. Everybody's involved. Everybody's working together. How is that dynamic on the Boston side?
It's good. I think in the past we have had close-knit teams. I mean, I think last year we were a couple one-goal games away from having a completely different season. But the importance of that is huge. And, that's part of the challenge of putting together a great team is fitting personalities and creating chemistry. And I think we're all excited about the change, and that's not to speak on any of the people that left because, I think the reason that a lot of these guys I'm talking about are ready is because of the influence of a Ryan Boyle and a Kyle Sweeney and a Berger. And, these guys taught us a whole lot in our short time with them, in the last couple of years. And I think we're all excited to have some new faces. And, in the last 2 years, when you look at the league, there's been a kind of a dark horse young team that maybe you didn't see coming. Charlotte 2 years ago and maybe in some people's eyes, Rochester last year. So when the talent is so high across the league, it's the smallest things that can make a big difference. And, in my opinion, team chemistry and having that camaraderie is a huge part of it. So that's definitely something that, you can't force. You have to just kind of let it happen naturally. But, we'll certainly make the effort, and we're certainly expecting for that to be a big part of our season.
We just talked with Schreiber and Carolunas for Ohio. I think the Ohio has the opposite dynamic of you guys. Ohio, I'm convinced their offense is going to be ridiculous. As far as Boston, I like the defensive end. The question I pose to you is who's going to score all the goals?
Yeah, I think that's a fair question. I mean, again, it goes back to we lost a lot of proven guys, but I don't think it's fair to ignore the guys that are there. And a name that I continue to go back to is Brent Adams. I mean, I have not seen a short pole in the league that can cover him yet. Everybody will refuse to long pole him. And I don't know what the stats are for him, but I remember last year he was scoring 2-3 goals a game every game down the home stretch. And Kevin Buchanan, if I'm not mistaken, led the league in goals last year. And I think we all know what Will Manny can do, and he's one of the hardest workers in the league. So the Will Manny we saw last year is going to be a shell of the one that we're going to see this year. So there's no doubt we lost a lot on that end, I agree. I think that we've got a good shot at improving defensively, but we'll need new guys to step up. Hopefully some of these college guys, and I really like Ryan Tucker, and I really like Gleisner, and Will Stanwyck obviously is an extremely talented player. So, hopefully we can replace some of those big-time scorers by committee and, run a lot of two-way middies and get a lot of people scoring in transition. But truthfully, that's not a huge concern for me. I think we'll find ways to score goals. I think we have the talent to do it. I think everybody in this league has the talent to do it, and it really comes down to, putting it together and making the right plays when you need to make them. I don't think talent-wise there's really a big gap between anybody, to tell the truth.
And I kind of pose this question to Tom Shriver. I'll pose it to you, and this will be the last one, and we'll let you go. Who is the who's the player that the team added that you're looking forward to most playing alongside?
That's definitely a tough question to answer. I'm really excited about a lot of the players that we've added on. One in particular that I am excited to play with is Adam Gittleman. We obviously have a great goalie in Jordan Burke, and I think it's going to benefit both of them having each other on the team. We ask a lot of our goalies in the MLL, and so, to have two goalies of that caliber, I had a chance to play with Gittleman briefly at Team USA tryouts last year, and his leadership and his athleticism is you know, pretty unbelievable. And I just remember, you know, really enjoying being on the field with him. So I'm excited to get his energy out there. And you know, there's another guy that his leadership in the locker room is going to be huge. I mean, he's doing a great job as a coach at Harvard. He's been in this league. He's had success. So, again, I just think that we've got maybe some hidden gems or some guys that, that people are maybe, you know, forgetting about or not talking about when you look at a lot of our losses that will come out there and show out. But you know what? At the end of the day, talk is cheap. And, you know, we'll see what happens here in a couple weeks when we take the field at Gillette.
Scott, we appreciate you coming on. If there's ever a player, if there's ever a guy who we hope make our predictions null and void, it's you. And we appreciate you coming on. And best of luck throughout the course of the season. Continued success, continued health for you and everyone else on the Cannons roster. And just thanks for coming on. I know I speak for Tom. And like I said, we appreciate you coming on.
Yep, no doubt. I appreciate you guys having me. I really love your show and what you guys do. And you know, just like what we're doing, it really is great for the sport. So, you know, thank you for what you guys do, and thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. And it is the last couple minutes. So, Tom, we need to kind of wrap this thing up. So I'm going to go ahead and get everything else out of the way. Thank you to Tom Schreiber. Thank you to Brian Carolinas. And thank you to Scott Ratliff for coming on to our show. We'll be back next week, hopefully with Joe, if he can ever get over his preordained situation where he actually will come on. And I know he's going to hear this about 3 days, but hopefully he comes on so we can talk a little more collegiate lacrosse. Hopefully we can tackle a little bit more of the MLL because training camps are starting, which is super exciting. And we're all super excited about exactly what's going on with each and one of these teams. We'll be back next week, 8 p.m. It should be an hour and a half show on the Laxworm Experience presented by laxdirt.com and laxworm.com. So we hope all you guys will tune in. And for Tom Bovey, I'm James Boger, and we hope that you guys have a great week. Hopefully you guys enjoy all the collegiate lacrosse going on this weekend with ACC and other conference play going on. Best luck to the Syracuse Orangemen who beat Duke, which thank God we didn't mess around with this week. Thanks,
is it,
Tom.
Is beat the word you want to use there?
I mean, is
beat
killed
what you're going with?
Destroyed. I don't want to say any other word because it connotates other terrible, horrible, violent crimes. It wasn't good. So let's move on from that. But Syracuse was obviously the best team over the course of the weekend. And
there's actually film out right now. The Duke team is actually just showing up to the Carrier Dome because they didn't this past weekend.
Thanks to Scotty Ratliff. I love the fact that he loves his team. That's awesome. The guy is high up on his team. He's not letting anybody tell him that they're not the best team in the league. That's awesome. Thanks to everybody else for coming on. Thank you, James. Have a great weekend.
Jeez, I can't believe I let him get in a word about Syracuse.
Either way. Oh, man. That was 20 seconds I didn't need a part of. Either way, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Thanks for Laxworm Experience. And we'll see you guys next week for the Pro Lacrosse Face-Off. This is James talking to Tom, and we are logging off. See you guys next week.